children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair? Good evening and welcome back to MASC's weekly radio show on Family Matters. MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages, for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Our number again, remember, all calls are kept strictly confidential. Someone can call anonymously even. Our number is 718-758-0400. So tonight, I'm really happy to have on with us a colleague, a friend, somebody that we dealt with in a different setting in rehab, and that is Heather Monroe. And she's a psychotherapist. She's a wellness educator. She specializes in working with relational trauma, and she's the founder of Monroe Wellness. And she's really a very creative, flexible, wonderfully understanding individual to help families or individuals deal with whatever trauma they may be struggling with. So I would like to welcome on tonight, Heather. Nice to speak to you again. How are you?
Oh, good evening, and nice to speak to you too. And I love MASC's organization and what you guys do. So thank you for having me here.
Well, it's always nice working together for helping the people. So let's talk about your specialty, and that is relational trauma. Tell my listeners, what is relational trauma, please?
Yeah, so I define relational trauma as a consistent disruption in a child's sense of safety, either or emotional, so either emotional safety or physical safety within the family system.
When relational trauma happens to when somebody has that feeling of relational trauma, what is usually, how does it play out when it comes to attachment trauma?
Yeah, so relational trauma and attachment trauma are very interwoven. Usually, if they almost always, when there is relational trauma, there's attachment trauma. And attachment trauma is when a caretaker is consistently misattuned to a child's emotional or physical needs. And so if there's relational trauma, like if there is, if a parent uses psychological control, a lot of shaming in order to discipline a child, if there is something called emotional incest, which means when the caretaker is treating the child like a husband or a wife. Basically, the child is parentified. And if there's containment issues in the home, meaning that the parents are unboundaried with the child, all of that is misattunement. So it is going to affect the child's attachment system. And an attachment system is how we connect to ourselves, to another human being, and to our environment.
So, I mean, parenting does not Usually you get married, you don't get a manual on how to be a parent. And the world was a very different place years ago than it is today. So are you seeing differences in people that may be, 40, 50 years old to young adults today when it comes to relational trauma?
Am I seeing a difference?
Yeah, in the
Well,
world and in general, in your clients.
I think there's good news and bad news. The good news is that parents today, even though there isn't an instruction manual, I'm a parent too. I wish there was, because each child is different. There is a lot more science available to me than there was to my mom, let's say. So we know that we have a lot more science to back up healthy parenting styles than we did a generation ago or two generations ago. So that's the good news. The bad news is that there is also a lot of external factors now that also affect teens and children's mental health, like social media, like all the technology that we have. So a parent these days is fielding a lot more distractions and maladaptive behaviors and coping mechanisms than, let's say, my parents had to or your parents had to.
Absolutely. So, can you give examples of what relational trauma looks like? Let's start with that.
Sure. So I gave some examples earlier about certain examples of like, so if a
I'm
child.
sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt. So in elementary age and then in high school age, how it can play out.
Sure. Okay. So let's talk about misattunement because I think that that is going to be something we can all relate to. Now, the good news is that we are incredibly resilient humans and we don't have to be attuned to our children's needs all the time. Okay. There's like a big window where we can be misattuned. However, when we're talking about relational trauma and attachment trauma, some examples would be if a parent is unable to regulate their own nervous system. So, what I mean by that is if you see your child upset, instead of remaining calm and allowing that child to co-regulate with your body, because that's what we do as humans, we co-regulate with other people's nervous systems, other people's bodies. So, if we're upset and someone else gets upset because we're upset, that's not going to be helpful to us, right? So if you're a parent and you see your child upset, and every time you see your child upset, you get super anxious and your heart beats really fast and you don't know what to do and you get really flustered, that's not helpful to the child. And it's actually a form of misattunement. Now, if this happens every single time where your anxiety rises every time you see your child struggle with something, it's going to create an attack. It's going to disrupt that child's secure attachment. They're going to think, I can't get upset because when I get upset, mom or dad gets so upset. And that makes me scared, right? So in elementary school, this can start looking like children can hide things from us, right? Because they don't want to disrupt. The other way that a parent can be misattuned is that whenever a child's upset, the parent says, "Whatever, don't worry about that. You're fine, you're fine, you're fine." And by saying that, we are not taking in the child's feelings and helping them with those feelings. And so a parent who disregards emotions on a consistent basis is going to disrupt that child's secure attachment system. One of those children might become avoidantly attached, and the other one might become anxiously attached. If sometimes you can be attuned, but most of the time you can't, that looks more like anxious attachment. If you can almost never be attuned and dismissive almost all the time, that can become avoidant attachment.
So, People may ask, is relational trauma the same as PTSD?
So it can be. It can be, but I would say that for post-traumatic stress disorder to occur, there has to be some real markers of, let's say, and everyone's nervous system is different, right? So some people can experience PTSD when others don't in the same situation. So let's say that your house has a lot of yellers. Like that's how we communicate. We tend to yell and scream a lot. You might have a child that's really sensitive to yelling and screaming. And so when there's a lot of noise and chaos in the house, yes, that can look like trauma for a child. It's a little bit different in the sense that PTSD is really kind of significant with traumas. We're talking more like complex trauma rather than acute PTSD trauma, if that makes sense. PTSD tends to happen when there is kidnapping, sexual or physical abuse in the house, when there is war, when you see someone get into an accident or you yourself are in a vehicle accident. We're talking about symptoms of a more acute PTSD. Complex trauma is when there is stress after stress after stress that can make us have some symptoms of PTSD as well, like nightmares, like hypervigilance. So, yes and no is the short answer.
Right. So, Heather, there are plenty of people that have trauma when they're a child, and then later in life, it only starts to come out. Do you want to talk about the different ways that it may, suddenly show up?
Sure. So the way that relational and attachment trauma affects us, I want to talk about some real specific ones. It affects our ba they affect our boundary system. They affect our self-esteem. They affect the way that we relate and attach to other people, like I said. And it affects our sense of self-care. So how we take care of ourselves, as well as the last one it affects is our intuition, our ability to trust ourselves and to trust in ourselves and our ability to make decisions for ourselves.
Some people that may have had a difficult childhood or even adulthood, sometimes people block things out or work towards, moving on from the trauma. But blocking out trauma is really, it takes an effort and it really sometimes could be something that will get triggered suddenly and then people won't even realize what's going on. So what are the some results of when people block trauma? What could it look like? And then what does one say to somebody or not say to somebody when they suddenly come out with something that has been blocked and now shows up?
Well, it's a great question, and I would say that your example of reactivity, trauma reactivity, is basically it's impossible to block trauma out, right? Because it lives in our bodies. It doesn't live necessarily in our minds. We might have been able to block it out of our minds. However, we can't block it out of our bodies. The body keeps the score. The body remembers. So, if you look at relational trauma, if we can compare it to a veteran who comes back from war, okay? So a veteran comes back from war, and they hear a loud noise, and they immediately duck for cover. even though it's just a door slamming, they immediately, their body reacts by ducking for cover because they think it's a shotgun, right? They think it's a shot. That is, relationship triggers are exactly the same for someone with relational trauma. So you're going about your day, or attachment trauma. You're going about your day, you text someone that you're interested in, you know, that you just started seeing, and they don't text you back. And immediately your body, your nervous system starts frantically worrying about, oh gosh, what does this mean? Does this mean that this person doesn't like me? What's going on? And so you start frantically texting them again and again and again. And then you realize, you know, 2 hours later, the person says, whoa, I was in a meeting. Like, what was going on there? Why were you texting me so much? That would be an attachment trigger. And it's an example of basically how relationships and behaviors in relationships can trigger our attachment system in an unhealthy way if we have insecure attachment style.
So let's go to what type of modalities can help heal relational and attachment trauma in therapy.
Sure. So I've mentioned quite a few times about the body. And what I've discovered in my 16 years of work is that most trauma, you know, we can talk about it till we are blue in the face and be in therapy for years and years and years and know why we do all the things that we do, yet we can't stop ourselves. And that is because trauma is not stored in our head. It's stored in our bodies. So the work that I do with people is actually through the nervous system, through our bodies. Our bodies, when we consistently have stress, the body wants to release it in some way, but we won't let it because we don't know how. So what I do with people who have experienced relational trauma is I help them regulate their nervous system, so their ability to calm themselves down in a faster amount of time to get back to baseline by themselves. And the other way I work with people is I allow them to become aware of how they feel inside. Because when you're avoidantly attached, right, because you've experienced relational trauma or attachment trauma, you don't know what you feel inside. You kind of feel numb. Also, when you experience attachment trauma, relational trauma, you can be anxiously attached. And that means that you feel everything. It's like the first layer of your skin is kind of off of you. And so you have a hard time regulating yourselves. So it really depends who, the kind of body that I'm working with, but it's through the body is the main way that we become healers of ourselves and can gain earned secure attachment.
I'm wondering, attachment styles in general, can they be changed?
Well, that is the wonderful news, is that they absolutely can, and there's research and science to back this up. That it's actually called, when you come from an insecure attachment style and you become secure through work with a therapist and work with your partner and, you know, your support system, it's actually called earned secure attachment, because you earn it. And so just like our brains can be changed throughout our life, so can our attachment system. We can go from a disorganized attachment, anxious attachment, or avoidant attachment system back to a secure attachment system. And securely attached person knows their worth. They know how to self-regulate. They know how to put up boundaries, and they know how to contain themselves so that they don't do harm to other people through their actions either.
Now, there are some children that are very clingy. You know, parents call, they don't know what to do. They have, you know, 4, 5, 6 kids, and they have one child that is very, very clingy. What do you say to those parents?
So if there's a child that is more, I would say, anxious, because I always look at children's behavior as information, right? If we just take out all the other stuff, it's like, okay, what is this child's behavior saying to me? So clingy behavior tells me that they might have some anxiety around leaving me. If I have 6 other children, that makes a lot of sense, right? I'm only one person, and I've got six little people that need my love and support and attention, and there's absolutely no way I'm going to be able to give it to everyone at the same time. So one thing that I tell parents when they have a child that's a little bit more anxious than others is to try and carve out, it's not quantity, it's quality. Try and carve out, depending on how many kids you have and how much you work and all that stuff, just a sliver of time every day. It can be 15 minutes. It literally can just be 15 minutes. You can call it mommy and me time or daddy and me time, where you put down your phone, you put down everything, and you just connect with that child. And do that daily and see how that helps them. The other thing that I would suggest to parents with a child who needs that attention is also to just continuously help them to regulate their body by being calm in all the things that they're doing to try and get your attention. Just try and stay calm, regulate your nervous system, but try it before regulating another person's re nervous system.
Thank you. Heather, there are some people when they're very nervous, very anxious, they could laugh even by, a funeral. Some people ask about that on groups. Sometimes somebody will bring up that their reaction is that they laugh at something. Can you explain why that may happen, please?
Yes, such a great question. Okay. Laughing is a way, again, to regulate our body. And so if something happens that you find that's really sad, or the funeral is a perfect example. You're at a funeral and all of a sudden you just want to laugh, right? Laughter is a way of releasing energy. It's a way of getting energy out of our body. So if something makes you uncomfortable, right? Laughing is a way to kind of is a way to not have to feel the depth of what's going on, because to feel that depth, it might cause a different reaction. So for anyone who's asking this question, I would invite you, when you start feeling like uncomfortable, if you are seeing a therapist, I would love as a, like what I would do is when a laugh comes up, try to not laugh and see what happens. And what usually happens is that a deeper feeling comes underneath that laughter, which is usually grief in some way or sadness that the laugh is trying to protect. So instead of judging it, just know that your body is trying to regulate itself in a very uncomfortable position, and your body is used to laughing, but you can retrain your body all the time if you want to.
Right. And with good therapy, which you offer, you can teach one how to, rewire their brain reaction to whatever trauma they have been struggling with. Heather, somebody asked recently about what do therapists feel when their clients start crying in the room.
Oh, wow. I've never been asked that before. What do I feel? I usually feel the same emotion as the client. So if a client starts crying, I will sense the sadness that that client is feeling, and I will be able to hold it for that client. And what I mean by hold it is I will be able to stay, have my body, have my nervous system stay calm to allow their sadness to be there. So I don't start crying, because if I start crying, that client is going to want to take care of me, right? And so attunement in that moment, attunement to that client would be to feel that sadness, to really understand their sadness, and to sit with them in it. to sit with them in it long enough for that sadness, like a wave, to crest and then come down again, which every emotion does. Emotions are just energy in motion. And if we allow enough silence and enough process for that energy to come into our bodies and go out, then that energy is complete. It's gone in and it's come out.
And usually they'll feel that the weight has been lifted off their shoulders once they release. It can be, you know, a better feeling. It's
yeah.
not a bad thing to cry in therapy.
It's a wonderful thing to, crying actually emits all sorts of chemicals in us. That oxytocin, which is a bonding agent, it allows us to, it emits all sorts of chemicals and hormones that allow us to calm down actually. So crying is a way of our body saying, this feeling is so much that I need to release it somehow. And it is released through tears.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the body keeps the score. Could you tell my listeners about that wonderful book that we both recommend that everyone with trauma read?
Yes. You know, it is a... It's by Bessel van der Kolk. It's called The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. And it is a hefty read. So it is not light reading. It takes a while to get through it, but it really helps you understand how trauma is not something that we can deal with and look at from just a brain narrative place, that it really is stored in our nervous system, that it's stored in our body, and our bodies want to heal. They just don't know how to. So I would highly recommend, if you feel like you've got some trauma stored up in you or you've experienced trauma, that you see a therapist who specializes in trauma, because they're really going to understand how the body and the mind are connected and how trauma interrupts that connection.
Right. But for the parents of somebody that has experienced trauma, it is a very hard read, but a good read. Do it small few pages at a time. It is so informative because so many parents say, my child's being manipulative, my child is misbehaving, and they don't realize that their loved one may have experienced big T trauma, and they're really reacting from that pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also recommend that parents whose kids are really having maladaptive coping mechanisms, that it's not just the child who gets into therapy, the family needs to get into therapy. So there's a therapy called attachment-based family therapy, ABFT. And it is wonderful in bringing families together so that you are at least working through trauma in a securely attached base. And it really works on bringing families back to that earned attachment.
All right, we're running out of time. Thank you, Heather. Always nice speaking with you. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually for now still, hug tight. Tonight's show is in memory of Rivka Bas Yisrael. Please go online to maskparents.org and donate so we can continue with all the mask programs. Thank you and have a good night.
The Jewish Press is the largest independent weekly Jewish newspaper in the United States. It's packed with in-depth articles, interesting podcasts, information about the Jewish world, political and religious commentary, and more. Visit jewishpress.com or to subscribe to the print edition or advertise, call 718-330-1100. That's 718-330-1100.